Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 63 for July 23, 2006. Last week I said, oh, you know, dog days of summer, it's the doldrums, no news stories, and looks like this week we've got a three-hour show. We've got more news stories than you could shake a stick at. Let me introduce our panel, and then we'll get right into the stories, some big ones, too, this week. Speaking of big ones, John C. Dvorak and his big ones are here, dvorak.org/blog.
Should I talk with a deep voice now? Yeah. Is that what you're trying to...
Hello, this is John C. Dvorak. Patrick Norton is here, Mr. Slam Dance Industry. We're trying to stay cool. It's hot where we are. Hot. Can you hear the fan going?
And I heard it was like 108 up there.
Yeah, it's just awful. And we have a new guest, Kevin Crewell, as in Sprewell. Kevin is a former editor of Microprocessor Report. He worked at AMD for many years and is now at NVIDIA. What do you do at NVIDIA, Kevin?
I am director of strategic marketing. I do corporate research for NVIDIA.
Well, it couldn't have been better timing. I wanted to get Kevin on. In fact, Kevin asked to be on because of our Conroe, continuing Conroe issues. And we'll talk a little bit about Conroe and Merrim in a bit. But really, the big story of the week, and it's still at the rumor stage, although I think it's less of a rumor than just a matter of time. AMD, a friendly takeover of ATI for $5.5 billion.
Billion.
An interesting merger because, of course, you've got the NVIDIA ATI battle and then the Intel AMD battle, and to see AMD take on a partner here. Now, I want to say right up front, Kevin, that we're going to say right up front, you are not speaking for NVIDIA in any way. You're not here as a representative of NVIDIA in any way.
That's correct.
I want you to feel able to speak freely, and so I'm not asking NVIDIA this, I'm asking you. It is a rumor. It seems pretty credible, yes?
It's a rumor that's been around for a few weeks now. It actually goes back to just before Computex, and it's a rumor that just doesn't seem to want to die. So it's spread quite widely on Friday, and it's at this point in time, it's looking fairly, you know, realistic. I mean, it's something that you would expect AMD and ATI would have denied heavily if there wasn't actually something ongoing.
Apparently, somebody in the boardroom at AMD leaked the fact that the vote occurred on Friday. The fact is that the stock market believes it. AMD declining, ATI going up considerably.
Yeah. And all the other tech companies were going down on Friday except ATI.
Yeah.
What's the advantage of,
yeah, exactly.
of what does AMD get out of buying ATI?
Well, actually, short term, there's a couple things. One, they get to zing Intel because Intel invested heavily in ATI and Crossfire for the launch of Conroe. So there's a little bit of a zing to Intel. That's by far not important. That's a transient type of thing. The most important thing is AMD now can say they have a full, complete solution. They have chipsets that work with their processors, and they've always felt a little bit disadvantaged to some extent that Intel had their own chipsets and AMD did not, relying on third parties. Now, that said, AMD and AMD's partners, ourselves, NVIDIA and ATI, as well as VIA and ServerWorks, have been, you know, doing a pretty good job supporting AMD over these years.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. NVIDIA makes a great AMD chipset, the Enforce chipset.
Well, thank you for saying
which,
so.
Well, no, but I mean, like, literally, yeah. That brings me back to I'm not sure yeah. I see the corporate synergy that justifies a leveraging of assets.
Well, you're not alone. Yeah. The stock market didn't either. They thought that AMD stock tanked.
What it is, it's actually a long-term bet. Partly, it's all the fab capacity AMD's putting in place. So now ATI would get access to that directly, and... Even though ATI could always sign an agreement to access the fab as a foundry type deal, having ATI design group part of AMD would make it easier. The real long term issue is about 4 years from now, two more process generations. We're going to go from multi-core to many-core. You know, they'll be going from 2 to 4 next year, and then 8. And eventually, what you have is Moore's Law keeps giving you more and more transistors to play with. And what do you do with those transistors on the silicon? Somewhere along the way, you really seriously consider adding the GPU function onto the same silicon with the CPU. Much like back in the 486 days, we added the math coprocessor onto the same silicon with the CPU.
So Kevin, this is essentially you're releasing the earliest long distance rumor about the acquisition of NVIDIA by Intel.
Yeah, I was going to say that. And, you know, there's traditionally some tension between Intel and NVIDIA, because NVIDIA makes a chipset competing with Intel's chipset. They make
not as much
chipset.
As there's going to be after the buyout attempt.
Yeah, maybe. What do you think about this, John?
Well, you know, I've been talking to a lot of people about this over the past week or so, and the word I keep getting from people, there's actually a number of things going on at once, which may not make the ATI stock run-up such a good idea. First of all, with the AMD stock going down and ATI stock going up, it makes the proposition a lot more expensive, because this kind of thing is a stock deal. And so I'm also hearing that Intel knows about this, and they're doing everything they can by, you know, pumping up their Conroe and then sending out rumors about what's going to happen in December, which is apparently some killer chips, to do anything they can to queer this deal by, you know, slamming AMD stock and making it so it's the deal so expensive for AMD that they just simply won't do it.
So you're saying Intel doesn't like this. This is a scary thing, this merger for Intel.
They don't like anything that AMD does, and they just don't want to see them, you know, picking up a chip company that's going to give them a little leverage, because right now Intel thinks they're back in the driver's seat. Now, on top of that, there's supposition that if this deal actually does go through, that NVIDIA, even though our guest there won't confirm this for sure because he can't, but the rumor is that NVIDIA will then, you know, get in bed with Intel, more closely hook their products together. And since they really do dominate in the high-end gamers world, they can literally switch the focus of the gamers from AMD to Intel overnight, and it would be a disaster for AMD. So there's a lot more to this deal than meets the eye.
There's kind of a move in that direction anyway. I mean, people like this, the new Core Duo. They love the new Conroe. Gamers do. They prefer SLI to Crossfire, which is ATI's SLI technology. So an NVIDIA Intel pairing is rapidly looking like the best way to game.
Well, there's one other aspect, too, that has cropped up in the conversation, which is the possibility that if this deal does go through, since it will kind of screw NVIDIA, that NVIDIA, if they can maintain their dominance in the gamer side, they'll simply tweak the next generation of chips so they don't even run on AMD. Now, that would be a, you know, complete disaster for AMD. So this deal is not what it appears to be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are a lot, as John pointed out, there's a lot of negatives to this. In addition, if you look at the balance sheet, ATI is much lower margins than AMD. It's gonna take AMD's margins down if they merge.
Is this a desperation move from AMD? They didn't have, you know, they're looking at the Conroe. The X4 is not out till mid-2007. Are they panicking?
How will this help them? I don't understand how this is going to help them at all in the short term. If anything, it's going to distract management as they try to merge the two companies, just in the time when they have to be most focused on beating Intel and coming up with solutions that solve the
issue. So why are they even considering this? Could it be disinformation? Could the rumor be bogus?
No, the rumor seems pretty valid. I think that they consider. I think somebody came up with this. I think somebody came up with this idea in the boardroom, or somebody, and they thought it was a good idea at the time, and then they started to pursue it. I don't think it was fully thought out. I think that's the problem.
Well, I think actually the Wall Street analysts have finally discovered Gig, and they're now making investment decisions based on the number of digs on a particular article, because like I've you know, I played rugby with these guys. I've drank with them downtown. They make some really interesting.
They're just like you and me, you're saying. They put their lamp.
No, we're much more rational than they are. I just, like, you know, just, Wall Street punishes companies for like beating their own estimates, but not, you know, hitting analyst estimates. You know, they deliver
delivered, you know, 55 cents on an estimated 46 cents per share. Wall Street expected, you know, 58. So they, you know, blew 25% of the value out of the stock. And it's just like, wow, you guys are mean. You suck.
Yeah. John, you think that this may fall apart. The deal may fall apart.
Yeah, I think it probably will.
Well, I would be stock surprised tanking.
A rumor still at this point.
Yeah. Well, a pretty good rumor. How about you, Kevin? Do you think it'll happen?
Well, the problem, as John pointed out, is the stock. AMD stocks tank so badly, and ATI stocks held up reasonably well, that it's getting much more expensive.
Yeah.
So expensive. When they originally thought
could that be a blessing in disguise for AMD?
Well, I don't think it was a great idea to buy ATI at this stage.
Save from themselves.
They wanted to do a stock buyback, so you know, they had to generate a rumor to drop the value.
Speaking of stock buybacks, Microsoft says it's going to buy back $40 billion of its own stock. Why?
Because they've got umpteen billion dollars doing
giving
nothing.
That money to the shareholders.
Yeah.
Microsoft, give the $40 billion to the shareholders. What are they doing?
Microsoft never does dividends, do they?
No, they have a little dividend.
If they gave out a big dividend, that would go mostly to Bill Gates. He'd make a fortune off that.
Well, he could give it to the Africa then, but it's beside the point.
Yeah.
You know, they could give it, you know, the shareholders should get that money.
It's a little misleading to say $40 billion because it's going to take them a long time. The board of directors authorized the company to buy $20 billion through a tender offer on August 17th, and an additional $20 billion through 2011. They bought $30 billion back a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they're trying to go private.
You know, it's not a bad idea. Go private, then split up. Then issue another, then do a new IPO.
They could be three companies. I've always believed that company should be split up into three anywhere. They should maybe spin off two companies and go up and make them public companies.
I know nothing about financial markets, but wouldn't that be a very profitable move? You buy back the stock at its current depressed value. You take the company private, you split it up into three, and then you do IPOs in all three.
Well, you don't even need to take it fully back. You don't even have to go that far.
You can split it up without doing that.
Yeah. I think they should split it up. I think it would be more fun for everyone. Yeah.
According to Yahoo Finance, the market cap for Microsoft is $243.5 billion.
Hey, they're getting there.
Yeah, was
quarter of the way there. Sixth of the way there. Something. You can see now why I'm not in finance.
Too high.
Companies traditionally do those buybacks for two reasons. Their stock price is depressed. They feel like they want to get it up, and so to speak. And they also want to show confidence to the investors.
It always looks like desperation to me.
And they don't know what to do with $40 billion. I mean,
you could just put 40. I mean, just put it in CDs. I can think of some things to do. What do you need to buy back your stock for?
Podcast could use a couple bill.
All right, most of the stories that weren't ATI and AMD were about YouTube this week. A lot of YouTube news, starting off with Monday, when it was announced that the prior week, the week ending July 16th, YouTube grew to astoundingly, I think, 75% growth in 1 week. They've had 300% growth since January. They're now doing 100 million videos a day.
Yeah, and it's starting to become a problem.
And you know what the kicker is to that story that is overlooked? This is the slow time of year.
Well, yeah. But is it for them? I mean, the kids are home. This is when kids are watching, right?
No, slow. It's just this.
Traditionally, the web numbers for most sites have dropped during the summer when kids
They're outside enjoying the weather.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting also. As somebody who shares a content distribution network with YouTube, and it turns out MySpace.
I think YouTube's killing Patrick's bandwidth right now, even as we talk.
It's not that they're killing bandwidth. It's that ISPs, I have a strong and rapidly growing theory that ISPs are starting to throttle pretty much everything coming
Ted Stevens
from
was
YouTube
right.
CDN.
Ted Stevens was right. YouTube is choking the tubes. He knew what he was talking about.
No. It wasn't YouTube. See, YouTube is making no money. Microsoft and Google were clogging the tubes.
Oh, yeah. We can't get anything out of YouTube. Never mind that. YouTube says its videos account for 60% of all videos watched online in the U.S. 20 million uniques. 20 million unique visitors.
And still, we wait patiently for a business model.
They don't need a business. What do you mean? They got a business model. NBC just announced that they're going to start using YouTube to show previews of new shows. They're even going to put an old show watching that they canceled. Nobody's watching. They're going to put back on the net via YouTube.
Don't you remember the phrase burn rate?
Well, they probably, yeah. I mean, yeah. I imagine that bandwidth cost them more than they could make. But yeah. I mean, they've got some good partners. NBC's partnering with them. After suing them, they decided, never mind.
So if like, I would be really curious to see what a breakdown between the number of, you know, girls talking about the guy that just broke up with them / you know,
now, most of the videos are Shakira, guys in their underwear pretending to be Shakira.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of fascinating to look at, you know, what the number one most viewed video is in the last 24 hours, the last week. Because, like, during the World Cup, it was amazing because there was World Cup content from everywhere.
I think a couple of things that are interesting. First of all, a lot of mashups and remixes. A lot of creativity out there.
If you want to call it that.
You use YouTube, John. You've got videos up on YouTube.
Yeah, I use it. I'm using it more now, too. I try to shoot stuff with a little pocket camera videos. I'm probably going to do a review on this on the blog. The Kodak V610 is not the world's greatest camera, but it makes a terrific video, mainly because the microphone's so good, as you attest.
Yes, I looked at your video of Annalisa, and it looks great.
And yeah, you put it on YouTube and then you post it on the internet or post it on your website because you can embed it. And you start to realize that you probably should have two or three of these posts a day. But, you know, every other blogger in the world's thinking the same way. And so that's why these numbers are increasing so drastically.
Yeah, that's an important point. Is not these are not all going to YouTube's homepage where they could see an ad or monetize it. A lot of these are just linked into web pages, other web pages.
Yeah, because they let you embed. I mean, Google was the first one that did that. I mean, as far as I know, I don't know anyone else who did it, let you embed some flash.
There are a couple
code.
Other companies. VideoEgg does it now. There are a couple other companies that do this. You could, I mean, I suppose they could put pre-roll or post-roll ads in there and make some money.
Oh, they might someday.
Well, there's a Panasonic Online Video Fest that because it was a sponsored ad on YouTube. I click through.
I think that there is potential to make money there. I guess the only issue really
if they can make
enough.
Yeah, because their bandwidth bill is extraordinary, and if they grew 60% last week, it's gone extraordinary to insane.
I heard it's $1.5 million a month.
That's nothing.
It's
nothing.
It's
nothing. We have $10 million in the bank.
Even that statistic is a couple of months ago. They're growing. They're doubling every few months. I mean, that even is out of date.
I don't have the time to sit down with scratch paper, but I can give you a pretty good idea if they're doing the volume relationships.
It's hard to tell really what but you do have you're using the True. Same provider, so maybe yeah. you would know better than us.
Yeah, do the calculation for us, Patrick. I think everyone would be interested.
We'll just sit here. I'll play some music.
Actually, why don't we actually have you? It's to keep the subject on YouTube, but to shift a little bit. You know, have you been watching the new YouTube policy? It's been interesting watching.
Boing Boing broke. Yeah, they say now, but this happens all the time with a lot of these sites. We own anything you post here.
Yeah. We own anything you post, but when you take it down, we won't own it anymore. But if we've sold it, it's amazing that they can see. You know, I have this horrible vision of America's funniest home videos.
By like submitting the user submissions to YouTube, you hereby grant YouTube a worldwide, non-exclusive, royalty-free, sub-licensable, and transferable license to use, reproduce, distribute, prepare derivative works of, display, and perform the user submissions in connection with the YouTube website and YouTube's and its successors, businesses, in any media formats and through any media channels. They left out the clause we used to have in our agreement in any world heretofore be discovered in any media content. I mean, yeah. That's just a normal disclaimer.
It doesn't bother me, you know, because you can't, like, the fact is you can take it down if you feel like it. But most of the,
who cares?
Yeah,
but they can sell it before.
I mean, what are they going to sell? Junk. It's a bunch of crap.
I wish they could sell it. I'd like to see them stick around.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think they'll be acquired? That's one of the assertions.
It would be Yahoo of all people, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, unless Yahoo buys them, hasn't every other company learned to not buy Flickr?
Yahoo has learned. After Flickr, Yahoo has learned. Flickr has a similar issue where you've got a lot of bandwidth. Nothing like YouTube, but you got a lot of bandwidth.
And they buy Delicious, too?
Yeah, but Delicious doesn't use bandwidth the same way Flickr does, and Flickr doesn't use bandwidth the same way YouTube does.
Yeah, YouTube really is a classic.
YouTube's now being sued also. By a news agency, the Los Angeles News Service. They're hosting footage of the beating of trucker Reginald Denny, and he's suing them. This was what I truthfully, we interviewed Steve Chen of YouTube in March for Inside the Net, one of our other podcasts, Amber MacArthur and I. And at the time, that was, I think, the big concern. I think it was Chen's concern. Wasn't monetization, wasn't bandwidth. It was, are we going to be sued to death?
I believe so.
Yeah, my personal favorite is people are putting these little homemade disclaimers that, you know, the replaying of this video is covered by commonly accepted fair use principles. You know,
and Chen said, "Look, if you issue a DMCA takedown request, we respond immediately to them." I mean, I think they're covered if they say, "Look, we've got 100 million videos."
I think it's the situation is a little more liberal than it was back in the Napster days when it was like, you know, they were under total attack. I don't think it's that bad, but I still think it's pretty bad, and I think these guys are going to get. Unfortunately, I think they are going to get shut down at some point. I just can't see it not happening because, in fact, I think a lot of people are from all sorts of angles are complaining. For example, on Cranky Geeks, we did a show that'll run in probably a week or two with J.D. Lassica,
right?
Who's a famous blogger. Yeah, and he's got our media, and he's got all these people, and he's very conscientious about copyright stuff. And he went on a rant about how YouTube's success is only because of all the copyright violations.
Well, that's a good point.
And he went on and on and on about it. And I'm thinking, well, maybe.
They became
famous with the Lazy Sunday video that was stolen from NBC. That's a good point.
Yeah, they had the Dave Chappelle show recently on, clips of that, and there's tons of anime on it.
Yeah. Yet, I think a lot of what is most compelling, if you look at the top videos, it's not, in fact, repurposed content. It is from time to time when that's the viral video of the moment. But most of the time, it literally is morons in their underwear singing Shakira songs.
Or morons watching, you know, people in their underwear.
A lot of lip syncing going on.
Well, while you're on the topic of this sort of videos and morons in their underwear, there's another website people should go check out. It's very hard to get off of the site when you get on it because it's so kind of uniquely interesting if you want to study the sociology of Gen Y, and that's Stickem. Have you seen this site?
No.
Have you been there?
Stickem?
No, Stickam.
Stickam.
And it's people, mostly Gen Y people with their cams, and it's like a wide open system with all these people online with cams and people kibitzing with each other.
Come on, that's got to be the most boring thing in the world.
No, I'm telling you, it seems boring, but it's like compelling in some weird way. Just go check it out. I mean, it's just odd.
This is the interesting thing about the success of YouTube or the problems YouTube faces. Everybody ignores the financial issues and the legal issues they face. They look at 100 million videos a day. They look at 300% growth this year, and they say, we want that too. And there are a lot of copycat sites.
Yeah. Have you guys heard of Gooba.com?
Gooba, yeah. Gooba has been around since 97 or 98.
Have you seen Johnny? Have you heard about Johnny, which they put together?
What's Johnny?
It's a really interesting. It's essentially it'll create a hash for a frame of video.
Yeah.
Basically, they took a tool that was designed to detect copyright violation for stills, and they adopted it to detecting copyright violations for video. And they're filtering. Basically, they're getting a list of content from the or a list of things to look for from the MPAA, I believe. And they basically run this system on all of the videos that get posted up on Gooba.
Because they just did a deal with Sony to carry Sony's movies for sale.
Yeah, the Warner Brothers. They're doing Warner Brothers stuff. But they're apparently actually going to be making it available to other sites. So,
well, if you think about it, YouTube smells like the next Napster. Soon to be sued out of existence. You know, the Napster lawsuit is still going on, by the way. I didn't realize that. You're going to need something like that. That was what killed Napster. They said there's no technological way we can prevent the piracy.
Well, one of the other things about YouTube and then these clips, I mean, you have people like Jon Stewart of The Daily Show who they pretty much freely distribute all these clips of their show. They're sections of the entire program. They put it on their own website, and they don't really care if somebody posts it on YouTube. And the fact of the matter is most of these things are promotions. In some odd way, I mean, the classic example was that NBC suing them over a clip from Saturday Night Live that actually indicated to people that maybe Saturday Night Live was funny again. It was essentially a commercial.
They learned their lesson, though. I mean,
they did, but I mean, how many other people aren't learning their lesson? Right. I mean, because most you don't really watch anything that runs more than a few minutes on YouTube. At least I don't. I have watched some longer things. But
here's where they're going to get in trouble, and this is like this lawsuit with the news agency, the news service, is this video. This guy sells this Reginald Denny trucker beat-up video to news outlets. This is his bread and butter, and there's a lot of people like that. You know, the Zapruder film comes to mind, where of the Kennedy assassination, where that's their bread and butter. That stuff leaks out onto the net and is widely distributed.
Right.
They're dead.
No, I agree. It's a problem.
Apple may be doing movie rentals, according to Think Secret. You know, Apple, this always happens. Apple's got a conference coming up, the Worldwide Developers Conference, next month. And always the rumor mill goes crazy talking about the next iPod or the next this or the next that. There seems to be, though, some consensus that Apple may, in fact, offer movies for rent on iTunes. Kind of a Netflix, a virtual Netflix.
Gee, what a shock. Who would have ever even anticipated such a move?
Well, you know,
especially since he's been negotiating for months to try to do movie sales through iTunes.
Right. I guess if they did it, you would want to see them come up with an iPod that had a better screen, right?
Which Apple's, you know, what Thick Secret says is going to be available in 2007. Rumor has it there's going to be an NVIDIA processor in it to do some 3D for the menuing system. Since it seems to be rumor day when we're not.
Just a rumor.
Kevin
just a
rumor. Well, and scores.
New comment.
It's always fun to watch the Apple rumor mill, you know, get overheated. It's kind of crazy. I usually don't report these. I just thought I'd throw that in since it's got a movie angle. Moving on, did you see Jason Calacanis, everybody's favorite hothead? He created a dig-alike on Netscape as a Netscape homepage, and now he's pissing off the diggers by offering to pay the top dig submitters, not just Dig, but Delicious, Flickr, MySpace, and Reddit, to pay them for their stories.
I've read his original posting, and what he said he wanted to do is he wanted to hire people who there's a small group of people who generate huge amount of traffic on Dig and whatever you are, right? They're kind of the leaders of it. Right. And what he wants to do is he wants to hire them to post on Netscape.
Right.
He wants to basically, you know, he's basically trying to jumpstart Netscape's homepage, and he needs a core group of people who, you know, have that cool hunters, whatever you want to call them, who have that ability to track down the really cool stories and post them.
Jason has an amazing ability to not only pick some hot button issue, get a lot of attention for it, and while doing it, to piss everybody off.
But, you know, he was also the one, he's, you know, how much did he sell weblogs for? And,
20,
you know, this is like,
million,
what does this sound like? You know, you're paying people to blog. That's against blogs are about being free and breaking out of, you know, corporate media control.
It does. It's an important question. Why does somebody, like, I mean, look, at these guys are putting up hundreds of stories, like 450 stories a month on Disney.
They're editors. They're editors.
They're doing it for free. Now, the question is, why do they do it? Do they do it for the glory, right? Are they for sale?
Okay.
That's the question. Are they for sale?
This isn't about sale. There's nothing, you know,
it is. He says, I'll pay you money to move your posts over to my place.
Well, so, you know, if somebody, you know, look, you know what? If you're good at something and somebody offers you to pay you for it, it's like, outside of a couple of particularly standing out examples in the golfing world who stayed amateur their whole careers, if you're already spending 4 hours a day posting on Dig and somebody says, I'll give you $1,000 a month, you know.
Well, I don't think he has any takers yet. That's an interesting question. I mean, if you did it, don't you think you'd become a pariah?
You just use a pseudonym, Leo.
How many people know who it is? You know, you're Johnny2274 on Dig. I mean, how many people know who you are unless you give a lot of information?
Well, because I think at least now, while there's no money in it, a lot of the reason people do this is because they want that, you know, that handle, whatever that handle is, to be well known.
You know, it's good to be the amateur champion of the world. It's great to make a living.
Well, that's what Jason's saying.
How much of a living at $1,000 a month?
It's not a great living.
Yeah, but you think about it this way. If you're spending 4 hours a day posting on Dig or researching and posting on Dig, or maybe you're a genius and you manage to find 150 to 400 stories a month, you know, in your copious, you know, a minute here and a minute there. If you can do the same thing and pick up $1,000 a month, you know, do you want to be loyal to Dig? I respect that. You want to pick up $1,000 a month to cover the fact that, you know, spending.
Do you think that somebody with deep pockets can take a site like Netscape and turn it into a success?
No.
By throwing
money. But they can try.
Well, of course they can try. He is trying. The question is, can you do it?
Depends on your definition of success. I mean, I don't think they're going to be able to match Digg because there's also other kinds of...
Well, technically, you know, they're bigger than Digg, but just because people don't know how to change their homepage.
Yeah, exactly. They're dumb. So they pop up
people.
And then they immediately move to something else.
Right,
it's not the
right.
same if somebody goes
no,
there.
No, I agree.
So I don't know. I think it's an interesting publicity stunt.
It's a publicity stunt.
Yeah. It's a parallel between the relationship of Microsoft and Apple for, you know, most of the previous decade.
Hey, it worked. I mean, it got our attention. Got my attention anyway. You guys don't care. Have you ever, Patrick, I know you go to DEF CON. Have you ever been to the HOPE conference?
No, actually.
We have a correspondent. I'm going to bring him in right now. Hey, Darren.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
Welcome. Darren's joining us. John C. Dvorak's here. Patrick Norton, Kevin Crewell of NVIDIA. Darren Kitchen is one of the hosts of Hack.5 at Hack5.tv, right? Or is it Hack5.org?
Hack5.org. It's HAK5.org, yep.
And you were at HOPE.
Yes, we just got back from HOPE.
You said it was really boring.
There was lulls, you know. There was some interesting stuff, and there was also some crazy political activism stuff that we weren't so really into. And then, you know, the whole general sense of the thing kind of had a loose LAN party feel going on. There's, you know, at night, you know, drunk people on Segways and people hanging out in hammocks, watching movies on projectors. So
sounds like my house. So HOPE is run by Emmanuel Goldstein of 2600, the Hacker Magazine. A couple of interesting things has happened. One was that a speaker was arrested just before his presentation. The FBI let him off in handcuffs. Did you see that?
Yeah, actually, that was in the A Hall, and I was thinking about
careful
it.
Careful how
was,
you say that.
Okay, it was in the hall that I wasn't in.
Okay,
basically, so the session was "Privacy is Dead, Get Over It," and I'm looking at the book, and I'm like, you know what? I know that, so I'm going to go to this other one on password cracking, time memory trade-off, and then see quantum cryptography. So, the password cracking and TMO was really cool, and then. Decided to check out, you know, stay in that hall for the quantum cryptography, and guy comes in and says, quantum cryptography has been canceled, and blah, blah, blah. We're like, oh, let down. And then he's like, and Kevin Mitnick won't be joining us. We're like, ah, bummer. It turns out he's in a hospital in Colombia.
What happened? Is he okay?
They don't know anything more than that. In fact, they told us a hospital in Colombia, and we're like, where? And they're like, I don't know if it's Columbia Hospital, if it's Columbia in the U.S., or if it's Columbia. So that's all we know.
I'll try to find out. I'll ask maybe.
Yeah, and then the HOPE guy's like, so you want to know what just happened in the other room? And we're like, oh, what'd we miss? So he lets us know the whole story about the Stevens guy.
Steven Rambam. I can't be pronouncing that right, but that's how it's spelled.
I can't either.
Rambam, the owner and CEO of Plurium, a company that bills itself as the largest privately held online investigative service in the United States. I guess the deal was a volunteer gave Rambam a few small pieces of information. The volunteer was Rick DeCon, and Rambam was going to show how in just 4.5 hours he was able to dig up 500 pages of personal data and show that data and show how he did it. We don't know why the FBI arrested him, if it was related to that. I can't imagine it was, or to something else.
Well, it could be, you know, if he's accessing networks he's not supposed to, he doesn't have legal access
maybe,
to. But
yeah.
The best thing, I think, is the guy he did the research on, DeCon.
Yeah.
He actually found that somebody who's been spoofing their their Social Security number since 1983.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I thought that was the best part.
He said, all I gave him was my email and name. He knew everywhere I'd lived, every car I'd driven, and even someone else in Alabama who was using my Social Security number. He found all my friends, pictures of friends, knew about my brother's criminal record. Oh, that's mm-hmm. a scary. So I guess privacy is dead. But you knew that, didn't you, Darren?
Well, yeah, but as soon as I found out that the quantum cryptography session was over, I caught the last half of the privacy is dead. And, you know, I hate how these conferences are with all the good stuff side by side, and you got to choose.
Right.
So, you know,
so
in hindsight.
So who did the conference? I mean, Rambam had been arrested.
Oh, well, there's three of there was originally four of them.
Oh,
so
okay.
There was three others, private investigators. And yeah, it was really interesting, and the guys were really funny, and the Q&A session was great.
It always helps if one of the speakers has been arrested by the FBI minutes before the presentation. It just gives it that little
edge.
Frisson.
Oh, definitely. The atmosphere around the conference right after that was a lot more amusing.
I saw a story, maybe you can clarify also, about cloning, RFID cloning. Did you see that demonstration?
No, I didn't.
It looked like what they did is took an, somebody had an RFID chip embedded in his arm. And they had a device which cloned it within a minute or two and was able to make a duplicate RFID with exactly the same information. So something supposedly impossible, according to the RFID people.
Mm. You see, that's why I went to the vendor booths and picked myself up a RFID-resistant wallet.
Made of duct tape, no doubt.
No, it's not duct tape, but it's got this mesh inside. I don't know. I know. I probably could make my own for like way less. And
but you know, if the U.S. government's going to use RFID in passports and it's easily cloned, how long before somebody in Alabama is using my passport?
Well, I thought they said that they were going to provide wallets for the RFID passports that would shield them.
Yeah, well, don't leave
them. Yeah, that's
around.
Real thin.
Until you open it, of course. And once you open it, and then...
Yeah.
I've got a friend that does RFID. Basically, his group does RFID attacks, and they've already done a lot of stuff by, you know, designing a decent antenna and pointing it. They can basically pick up RFID tags from distances that are theoretically
impossible.
Didn't
they do that at DEF CON? They did a long...
Yeah, John did that. Harrington did that.
Yeah. Any other stories from Hope? Any other interesting things happen?
You know, besides finding out Kevin Mitnick is in the hospital, I can't really think of anything else that was like really stood out. I think the most interesting thing I saw there was the password cracking time memory trade-off, which is similar to rainbow cracking or rainbow tables, but it's kind of a different aspect of that. It's a different technique done by this guy, Jason Davis, and he's doing the site MD5 lookup. And it takes a lot more memory than rainbow tables, but it's 100% effective.
So for those of us in the studio audience that aren't familiar with rainbow tables...
What was he talking about?
Yes. Okay, so this guy basically creates a huge database of all the possible passwords and their hashes so that when you're going to brute force a password, instead of just trying everything one after another, you run it through this lookup table, and it seriously took 1 second for everything. He would do five, it'll take 1 second, because he's put it in a MySQL database rather than flat files. So it's really amazing stuff.
Which is why you use hash or a longer...
Well, what you should be doing, at least with Windows, or actually anywhere, is using a passphrase. Use something like, my first computer was IBM PC XT in 1983. That's a bit long. That's maybe a little overkill, but at least you've got capitals and numbers, spaces, and... If you do that if you use a password 15 characters more on a Windows system, it won't save an LM hash, and LM hashes are really, really weak and really easy to break.
There you go.
So,
well, I thank you for the update on Hope, and I hope Kevin's okay. We'll see if we can find out, and we'll let you know. I just checked his website, and there's nothing there.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything on the blogosphere.
Yeah.
Wow.
Also, that was Kevin Mitnick who got sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my Skype connection flickered.
We should. We should. What's his girlfriend? We should.
Darcy.
Darcy. Should I'll call Darcy right now while we're talking. But we're gonna let right now. We're gonna let Darren go. Darren, I thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
And I appreciate your making the effort. Hack5.org, H-A-K, the number 5.org, is a really great. Your second season just began.
No, it's our season premiere is August 5th.
It hasn't happened yet. Okay.
No, we're going to have stuff from Hope, a whole bunch of coverage of that, as well as lots of other nifty exploits and mods.
You have seasons?
Fun stuff. Yes, we're in our second season. Well, we figured, you know, we'll do 10 months on and then take 2 months off because we don't do this for a living. So
they were brilliant. Patrick, I just want you to know they were inspired by the screensavers.
Yes, we've adopted the format.
I just never realized they were doing it in seasonal.
We didn't even do seasons. We just kept going on and on and on.
Well, we needed a break and not go insane.
Of course, we were getting paid to do it.
Yeah.
Hey, it's great to
talk
to you.
One of these days, I hope. All right, thanks, guys.
It will happen. It will. You got a great program, hack5.org. Thank you, Darren. So a little update on Hope. And he said it was kind of disorganized, kind of wacky.
It is. It's extremely disorganized. Everybody knows it's fun. It's much mellower. DEF CON's more of a raging party. And it's also, DEF CON's really interesting because it takes place after Black Hat, and Black Hat's a pretty hardcore industry conference.
Right, so everybody's there already.
Yeah, so a lot of people basically do the presentations from Black Hat at DEF CON.
Right.
So you can, you know, instead of paying $6,000 or whatever Black Hat costs, you can pay $90.
Right.
And I should also point out, it's John Herring and Flexilis did the RFID.
Cool.
Set the RFID detection world record last year. Not Harrington.
That's the other thing I like about. I mean, I've never been to either conference, but you always come back with great stories from DEF CON, and I like these contests to do the longest Wi-Fi or the longest RFID detection, that kind of stuff. Those contests are kind of fun. Those competitions.
And they're getting the Wi-Fi ones are really getting out of control.
So it was like 30 kilometers last time, wasn't it? Something huge.
A lot farther than that.
More than that, really?
Wow. Yeah. They're getting into the hundreds of miles at this point.
Wow.
I mean, like 125, 200 miles.
Wow. Can you really get atmospheric bending? Because the circumference of the Earth, you just can't do point to point unless you're really high.
Fortunately, there's a lot of hills.
To do a high point down to a low point or something.
Yeah, the folks that run the Wi-Fi shootout. They actually spent a bunch of time with maps to figure out where they could get like sort of the longest valley with a high point at either end that was near Las Vegas. So you had to drive way out of town.
Did you see this Google? I don't know what to make of it. This Google Earth picture of this Chinese. I don't know what it is. People are using Google Earth and having a lot of fun. You're just spying, but they found a 700 meter by 900 meter hatch in China that is like a scale replica. It's huge, but it's a scale replica of peaks and valleys and snow-capped peaks and stuff. It's the weirdest picture if you see it. I don't know what it means. Nobody does. It's conspiracy theory time.
You're going to give us a link?
I will put a link in the show notes. You want a link? I'll find one for you to give on the air. But before I do that, we've got to stay with hacking news because there's another huge hacking story. Lindsay Lohan says that Paris Hilton has hacked her BlackBerry. And I just wanted everybody to know that there's some security issues now.
Why would Paris Hilton care?
To send, quote, lewd messages to her friends.
I think these people are using a few too many mind-altering substances at this point. Lindsay Lohan says that someone used her BlackBerry to send some disgusting and very mean messages, and the wording of the messages sounds just like Paris Hilton wrote it.
Oh, please.
Well, what? They said I'm hot. That's hot.
Lindsay Lohan is now certifiably nuts.
Paris Hilton's spokesperson says, I'm saddened that this happened to Lindsay. I've lived through this with Paris 2 years ago when her sidekick was hacked. And the loss of privacy is unbearable. But as far as any suggestion that Paris Hilton would have anything to do with this, that is silly, untrue, and unfortunate. I don't know. I just love that story. It has no impact whatsoever on any of us.
Yeah, it'll probably run up the dig numbers again.
Yeah, it's a dig, isn't it? That's a classic dig story. Yahoo's stock price tumbling 22% on Wednesday, marking its largest one-day drop ever. Yahoo postponing its Google AdSense technology. They were going to do something like Google's doing with the text-based web ads, and they said it's not ready. The market did not like that. They are doing something interesting. They are going to offer a Jessica Simpson song without copy protection. This is an interesting trial. You pay twice as much. You pay $1.99 for the song, but you get an unprotected MP3.
Now, if only they could find some decent music to do that.
Yeah, it's too bad they picked Jessica Simpson.
You know, there's a fairly large number of people still buying her music.
Yeah, but they're not the... Do you think they're the kind of people who say, oh, I don't like DRM?
Yeah, but they're not looking at it as DRM. They're looking at it as being able to download it.
Well, that's true. And now, if you do that, you can play it on anything, including an iPod, which up to now, Yahoo has not been able to sell something that would play on iPod.
Right.
So it's actually... What do you think? Would you pay $1.99 for unprotected music?
Heck no.
I'd buy the CD.
And rip it.
Yeah.
You're talking about $1.99 for a single track.
A single track
should be 25 cents. That's what it should be, 25 cents, unprotected.
Like a phone call should be 10 cents. There should be pay for it.
When I was a kid, a nickel.
And they don't care if 1,000 people pirate that one song because, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a promo. It's to get them to buy more.
Yeah. Well, no, the premium is for a personalized name version of the song. It says paidcontent.org.
Oh, what she sings, DRM. Oh, Leo, I love you. Leo, you're my man. What? Personalized how? What?
Hold on. Look, I'm adventuring. Jessica Simpson's Yahoo Music, Jessica for You page.
Download it. Get it. Pay a buck. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's exactly what it is. Get your name in the song. Download a personalized MP3 just for you. Let's see if they have
I'd
Leo.
Pay a buck 99 for that. So they have some names.
What did they have a lot of names.
So did Jessica have to go in the studio and sing, I love you, Andrew. I love you, Patrick. I love you, Kevin. I love you, Dvorak. How do you say Dvorak? Is it Dvorak?
Doesn't have Leo.
They don't have Leo.
There. Hold on.
Never have Leo.
They have Patrick. I'm sure they have John.
Can you buy that song? I'd like to distribute it. Patrick, you're my man. Patrick can't do it. No one can. Gizmo's giving away free stuff. Gizmo.
That'd be nice, or I'll play the sample. In fact, here we go.
Oh, dear. Here we go. This is probably violating some sort of copyright.
I think we actually do have fair use for this.
Just the first few seconds.
Okay, we're connecting.
So you're buying this on Yahoo Music? You actually buy it?
No, it's the free sample.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, if you bought it, I'd be impressed. I probably can't even do it on a Mac, can I?
And that's about enough of that.
We didn't even hear any of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably not getting picked up by Skype.
No, yeah, you have to have special techniques.
It was perky.
All right, get a personalized. All right, I'm going to do it now.
Hey, Leo?
Yeah.
Have it personalized for the Twitch show.
No, they don't. She didn't sing one that says, oh, Twit Army, I love you.
Why not?
I love you so very much. Wait a minute. I'm going to buy one that says John.
I think you really like singing.
It's a new talent for you?
Leo's secret bubblegum pop.
Talent's
music
not the word
passes.
They usually use to describe it, I'm afraid, Kevin. It's more like a curse. All right. Let me see if I can.
A curse.
Okay. Credit card type. Okay, let me just type in my American.
Oh, now the show has deteriorated to us filling out forms on the air.
I was going
to
say, this is even better than watching gaming on G4.
I can edit it out. I can edit it out.
Get back to stick cam.
All right, you pick a story. You guys talk amongst yourselves while I buy John a song.
Hey, 1 terabyte hard drives.
What about them?
Who?
They're going to be available before the end of this year. We had Brian Dexheimer on DL.TV. And I did like a 20-minute interview.
And it's one disc. It's not a container with two of them in there, right?
No, I think the 1 terabyte discs are going to come later.
Got a 1 terabyte disc. We're sitting right here. It's made by Mac Store. It's 1 terabyte.
But it's not.
What's new about that?
It's just multiple drives rated.
Yeah, there's two drives in the box.
Mm. Yeah, but this is actually a single drive that contains a terabyte.
Oh, okay.
For the end of this year. So I mean, he also talks a bunch about what's going on with. I'm sorry?
They might use multiple platters.
So, I'm sorry, but one of the things we should probably do a special show on, since I wrote a column on it and I'm up to speed on this, which is unusual for me, is we're coming on the 50th anniversary of the hard disk in September.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. I don't think I'd want to buy a single platter or even a single mechanism terabyte. It just doesn't seem like, it seems like a bad idea.
Not single terabyte platters. You know, if you listen to the fabulous interview with Brian Dexheimer,
I will. But
one of the things he talks about is what it's going to take to get to terabyte levels of aerial density on a single disk. And it's, you know, that's coming, but it's a ways out. We're talking about a terabyte in a single hard drive at this point.
Right. If you talk to Gibson about this, he says that. You know, because his software Spinrite will actually watch the ECC corrections going on, and on a 200 gigabyte disk, there's whatever it is, a few hundred corrections a second or whatever, it gets to a very big number, where it's constantly correcting errors as you get this aerial density up so high.
Yeah,
as you might imagine, really. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the musical stylings of Jessica Simpson. And a very special, personalized song for John C. Dvorak. It's called A Public Affair. She's going to sing at some point, I'm sure. Have I already used up the fair use time?
None of us can hear it.
Yeah. Now you got to plug it in later, Leo.
Oh, you can't hear it? Oh, wait a minute, I'm
not
sorry.
Even a little bit.
Here you go. Enjoy, guys. This is for you.
Tom!
It's not really very well personalized.
Tom!
All right, that's enough of that.
Yeah, it sucks, whatever it is.
But hey, no DRM, which doesn't mean you can play it on your podcast.
Oh, brother.
Maybe I misunderstood.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll put it on the...
I'll give it to you, John, because I, you know, I have really no use for it.
I have a couple of personal notes to make since we keep throwing this stuff on these broadcasts. One of them is that I've noticed that we've gotten no response from anybody World Cup. We don't have any listeners, I believe, in Italy or France.
They're too busy partying.
I don't know. I don't think they speak English.
Yeah, you might be right. We do actually have France is one of the countries that we get a few thousand downloads a month from, but. Maybe they're not soccer fans.
It could be. And I've been getting a lot of people complaining since last week we started talking about cooking, and I claimed that I was going to post my flank steak
recipe. Did you ever do that?
No, you know, I'm going to post it today, so it'll be up when they go on there.
Wait a minute. How many people wrote to you and said, John?
About a dozen.
Where's your flank steak recipe?
There's a bunch of Twit listeners who are like to cook stuff, and they're just hungry for recipes. So I don't
Welcome
know.
To the latest Twit Network conference, Cooking with John, Thursdays. John and Leo.
Apparently,
it's the world's first audio cooking show.
Actually, well, you know, there's Control Alt Chicken. That's Alex Albrecht has a cooking show.
Yeah, but I'm talking about doing it, you know,
pure
over
audio.
Sound, pure audio.
Yeah, right. Radio cooking show. There you go.
I used to do
so what are you doing now?
I used to do a radio.
Sure do look hot.
I've done many a radio cooking show. That's a good format. That's a long time.
A radio cooking show. Anyway, so I apologize to people who were writing in.
Dying for that. So before we go, one of the things we wanted to talk about with Kevin Crewell is the new chips from Intel, the Conroe and Merrim chip. I saw something quite interesting. I didn't realize this, but at the IDF, and you probably saw this, Patrick, but I wasn't paying attention. One of the demos they did is they took a motherboard, a Yona, a Dell with a Yona in it. They popped out the Yona, popped in the Merrim, and got like 25% better performance on it. I didn't realize it's socket compatible.
It's platform compatible, so you can just drop them in.
That's just
one of the best things about it.
Yeah. Do you think you're going to see a lot of people doing that kind of an upgrade?
No. Actually, you can't. And for one thing, notebooks really can't do that kind of
because you can't get into upgrade. Them. Right.
Yeah. And most of the time, they're and then in desktops, they're actually, I think you do require a different motherboard because they've changed the voltage regulator.
Ah, shoot.
For Conroe. So Conroe is got a different voltage regulator and different control.
But if it were a Merrim, you could. So the reason I'm asking is because, for instance, a Mac Mini is using a Yona chip.
Yeah. That's my understanding is that the Mac Mini should be able to, the Mac Mini and the iMac should be able to do it. Just not confirmed, though.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, it depends if, depends if it's using a socket inside the parts and that you could access the processor and pop it out and swap it in. And you might need a BIOS upgrade, too.
If you could do such a thing, what kind of improvement in performance would you expect to see?
Well, Intel's been talking about 20% or more on notebooks. It depends on the application. I mean, if you're doing a lot of media stuff where you use the new SSE instructions or the new SSE unit, it's much faster than the old one. Also, if you're doing 64-bit software. The new, Yona didn't do 64-bit software, only did 32-bit, so it couldn't actually do 64-bit software. You should easily see 20% improvement in performance.
So let's take those one at a time. What programs use SSE?
Those would be more like games and anything media-oriented.
If you're ripping or
video editing software.
Yeah, Photoshop. All that stuff, yep. Transcoders would definitely use SSE. Also, it's a bigger cache. It's a 4-meg cache versus the 2-meg cache on Yona.
Yeah,
that should make
on the high end parts. The high end parts have 4 megabytes cache. The low end parts have 2 megabytes.
Yeah,
but it sounds like really the significant difference here is not 64-bit or better SSE, but really a new core.
Yeah, and it was a really major redesign from the guys in Israel who did the original Yona design.
These guys are great in Israel. They really know what they're doing.
They really saved Intel's bacon when NetBurst turned out to be a dead-end road.
Yeah, because
no pun intended.
They had this Prescott chip, which could actually fry bacon. So they did. They saved them.
Yeah. The kosher bacon.
Well, they backed away from the whole, I mean, they had to see that pipelining was going to work and people were going to optimize their software for these really long, you know, branch predictions and pipelines. And they gave up and they just made it faster.
Yeah.
You know, they just,
well,
they made a shorter.
We'll talk
about
it. Well, Kevin used to be at the microprocessor report, so he really knows what he's talking about here. Is the pipeline shorter on the new cores?
It's shorter than the Pentium 4. Pentium 4 went up to 31 stages of pipeline. This is back down to 14. And you go back to the Pentium 3, it was like 11-stage pipeline.
But the clock speeds are not improved clock speeds, so they must be getting some efficiency somewhere. How are they making it a more efficient chip?
They do more in parallel. They do it wider. Actually, they're doing more what AMD did with Athlon XP and Athlon 64.
Oh, interesting.
So, but they did it one more than AMD did. They, instead of three decoders, they put four decoders. They put more cache on board. They sped up all the circuitry that they could find. They crunched a couple of instructions that could fit together and executed them at once, so they get speed up there. There's lots of improvements, but basically it's more similar to what AMD did with the Athlon 64 than the NetBurst architecture, which turned out to be, you know, way off into the weeds. They did take some of the instructions, like the SSE instructions and some of the features that they had built into Pentium 4 and added it to Conroe into the core microarchitecture, but the microarchitecture itself is more actually more related to the Pentium 3 than it is to the Pentium 4.
Really?
Yeah, that's one reason. Actually, when they introduced the Pentium,
they're not going to put that in the ads, I don't think.
No. When they introduced the Pentium M originally, the Centrino part, they wouldn't talk about what's inside of it at all because it was much closer to a Pentium 3 than a Pentium 4, and they didn't want that sort of to taint the Pentium M, even though the Pentium M was a great chip, it performed real well, and this is just an evolution of that Pentium M chip.
Very interesting.
It's actually all goes back to a failed chip from Intel called Timda. Timda was a chip that took a Pentium 3 core, modified it, had a built-in memory controller, and a built-in display driver all in one chip. And Intel never released that chip because they made a mistake in choosing the memory. They used RAMBUS, and RAMBUS turned to be a big disaster. But that's actually the origin of the Pentium M and now the Core microarchitecture. So you never know what a failed program can actually come back in the end and save the day.
So what have we learned here in chip design? I mean, what mistake did Intel make, and how did they fix it?
We learned that it's always good to have a plan B.
if your great idea about long pipelines and branch prediction doesn't work,
have a plan B.
Have a second idea.
The 386 was a plan B for Intel many years ago. They had a different part called the 432 that was going to be the next big architecture, and that didn't pan out. So their plan B was the 386.
Essentially, to boil it down, what we're seeing with the Merrim and the Conroe is essentially returned to the Pentium 3.
Much closer to Pentium 3 than it is to a Pentium 4.
That's really interesting. I think that's really... I'm not going to say we missed the boat, but I think it is where people don't understand what's happened here. It isn't just a new Pentium 4, a new way of doing a Pentium 4. It's a new core that is, in fact, considerably faster.
Well, it's faster in performance, not faster in clock speed.
It's more efficient.
More efficient, yes. It's a good word. Efficiency is a really good word.
Kevin, what do you think of AMD's kind of, you know, they're kind of pulling an Intel and saying, you know, hold off, we've got our 4x4 technology coming.
Yeah, well, you know,
the hybrid dual socket stuff.
The 4x4 has some potential because you really need double the amount of memory bandwidth because now you have two processor sockets, each with up to four, you know, a total of four DIMMs each. So you can put tons of memory in this thing and also lots of bandwidth. So it could be a killer, but it's going to be hugely expensive. It's going to be a really niche product. Mm-hmm. For like, probably a $6,000 or $7,000, maybe more.
Right.
You couldn't possibly. The only other way you can see this is very similar to is what Apple's going to do with, you know, probably do with the next Power Mac. You know, it's also probably it won't be called Power Mac, obviously, because it's not Power Architecture anymore. But dual sockets and lots of expense on it. It's pricier to do it that way, but it does have advantages.
But do you think Apple's going to release a
Core 2-based desktop at the Worldwide Developers Conference next week, or a week and a half from now?
Well, you know, everybody tries to guess what Apple's going to do next, but it's a great, fun thing to do, but actually, you would be surprised if they didn't.
It seems
now.
Like it might be easier, though, for them to do a Merrim upgrade to the MacBook Pro first. Of course, they must be sitting on these chips and ready to do this new tech.
They have to be dying to replace the G5s at this point.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting to me is that every time Apple sneezes, you know, a report on it, nobody ever talks about when Dell's going to bring out their next chip or when, Dell's going to, or anybody for that matter.
But Dell's, Dell hasn't been sitting on the same processors for the last 2 years.
Well, and Dell has shipped Conroe, or at least is offering Conroe.
Well, how can we never talk about that?
Because they release at the same time Intel releases their chips. When Intel releases it, then everybody comes out and says, here we are.
And then Apple brings it out sometime later, so that's news. I'm just baffled by this. I think you guys are a bunch of Apple bigots.
Oh, you're just saying that because you know you're going to get a lot of lovely mail from people.
Yeah, save it for your blog, John. Save it for your call.
You're just fishing.
Apple baiting. I thought the Core 2 wasn't physically going into this, hitting a street until next week. Are they actually selling them now?
No.
Or just ordering? I'm going to Dell. I used to say I'm going to Dell right now, John. Yeah. Just for you.
It's not.
I don't believe you can buy it yet. I think it's the end of the month or early August.
Yeah, but so that was the 27th.
They pulled off. It was kind of weird. It's like the strip tease of this thing where they release some more information and a little more information. And what they did last week was release the NDAs for all the sites that had done benchmarks. So that's where you sort of whole raft of benchmarks, but no chips yet.
It's amazing that they're filling the entire channel from the low end. Instead of just doing like the high end version and then trickling the rest of them in, it's kind of neat to watch them. You know, try basically. I mean, this is an assault. This is a total assault on AMD.
Yeah, they said at their financial conference call that they had $200 million worth of extra units that they found that they could use that were production worthy, and in addition, they expect to have chips in the channel when they launch it. So that means motherboards and chips, maybe go down to Fry's and buy one.
I like that. I'm just laughing because I haven't built an Intel-based system in a really long time. So I'm looking forward to the idea that it may be for $183, I can pick up a 6300 that'll kick the snot out of my existing $500 system.
And, of course, you'd use a Enforced. Oh, no, you can't.
You could.
Could you?
Well, yeah, there'll be NVIDIA support for Conroe.
There will.
Oh, yeah. You haven't seen it yet, but there will be.
How'd you like how I got that out of him?
Yeah. Nicely done.
Yeah, there goes.
Do you have a ship date for that? So when am I building my $500 upgrade for my $500 PC?
With SLI and...
I don't think I'm going to be an SLI kind of guy.
I have two SLI systems.
Oh,
right,
shut
here.
Up.
Yeah, John, have you paid for either one of them?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Exactly.
It dropped off there, yeah. Actually, the GX2s are pretty good. Actually, it's like SLI on one card.
Yeah, see, I try not to own any single graphics card that costs more than,
You're not a big gamer either. I mean, that's not what you build a machine to do.
No.
Well, I can be a great gamer. It's just the problem is it's going to cost me my marriage and my job.
As long as we get Kevin on here, would you benefit in anything besides gaming with SLI? For instance, video processing?
If you keep a lot of windows open in Vista.
glass will look great. Really, seriously, is it just
for
gaming?
No, actually...
You can do some really good anti-aliasing, but I couldn't actually give you a good answer on that.
It's also good for multi-monitors.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I mean, you can pump out four monitors off of a double system like that. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'd like that. Yeah.
You would, actually.
Yeah, I'd love that.
And I've actually seen, graphics card, like mid-range graphics card from a year and a half ago actually start to choke when you get, like, 50 or... If you get, like, 15, 25, 35 windows open in Vista, you start getting your performance is not optimized, although the newer drivers are helping out with that.
Yeah, it's a lot of... These are early drivers still. You're in really beta drivers, and the drivers will improve a lot in the next 6 months.
Is there anybody else that's playing this game besides you and ATI?
In any significant way, no.
Yeah, or what about in an insignificant way?
Well, you still have Vias S and S3 around. Intel's, of course, you got Intel. Intel's integrated graphics has the largest market share in the business by far. It's good enough graphics is still acceptable to a lot of people, especially businesses. It really comes down to ATI, NVIDIA, and Intel for the business. That's it. And a little bit of S3. But S3's like I said, is pretty small at this point. It used to be, I remember back when it was S3 and ATI used to battle it out and leapfrog each other.
I remember reviewing graphics cards in those days.
Oh, yeah. That was fun. That was really fun. And it'd be back and forth and back and forth. And
oh, there used to be like 90 graphics vendors at one point in time.
Wow.
They all had these problems. Remember number 9?
Yeah, Voodoo.
And Voodoo?
Well, not Voodoo. You mean 3DFX.
3DFX.
Yeah, 3DFX. And
the Voodoo cars, yeah.
Yeah, Voodoo brand, yeah.
Yep.
And what happened to 3DF? Who acquired them? Was it you guys who acquired them?
Yeah, NVIDIA. Well, we acquired the property, and we hired about 100 of their people. But physically, we didn't actually acquire 3DFX. They just
there wasn't much to acquire, probably.
But yeah, I know. But what I liked about 3DFX, and it's overlooked, and I think you guys should really pick it up a little bit, which is they had some of the best tchotchkes.
Like what? Like what would you get from
3DFX? Oh, they had some gym bags and all kinds of cool
bags.
Stuff.
They have a great commercial.
I have a fantastic NVIDIA jacket. Like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't have one.
John.
You know, you should subscribe to right Valley Swag, John. Have you seen Valley Swag?
No, there's a place where you can swap swag.
They're basically saying, like, if you subscribe, I can't figure out if it's a joke or if it's serious, but they're basically there. The idea was they threw a party and that they're going to be, you'll be able to, like, basically sign up and receive shipments of the best in Silicon Valley swag.
Great idea.
Can't attend the parties? Can't get inside?
You know what I like to do with that stuff, although I wouldn't do it with that jacket, but you never know. Give it away to the homeless. Now, what I really enjoyed doing, during the era of tech TV, I grabbed as many of the big thinkers' hats and caps I could get a hold of. I had a box of them, and I'd give them to those guys that are at the freeway off ramps asking for money.
Excellent.
And I'd get the biggest kick out of seeing some guy begging for money with a big thinkers' cap on. It's just something weirdly strange about it. It's kind of a surreal kind of an image.
That's perverse.
I just want to say a really brief hello to. And he is a listener, and he is a big fan, and his brother-in-law sent us a note, and I just wanted to say hi to him. What else? Amazing statistics from the last episode of Twit. I got a great note from AOL, from Jeffrey Graham, who is our contact over at AOL Radio. He said the server guys there was quite a bit of steam coming off of the server on a Sunday night when Twit 62 came out. We pushed, I think, 3.5 terabytes at a peak of very close to a gigabit a second off the server. So a tip of the hat and a thank you to the guys who hose down the servers and keep them from overheating when Twit comes out, because that's an important job. Don't you just see them kind of in the hold there with the boilers? Say, oh my God, more coal! Here comes Twit! I don't know, man.
The thing is, maybe it's time to start staggering how the RSS is released.
Yeah, well, we talked about that before. I wish somebody would, because it's not up to us. It's be people like iTunes or somebody. We got to find a way. Patrick, the main reason Patrick's on is he has 3 boxes of crap now.
Yeah, it was originally one box of crap to the person who came up with the name.
Okay, and we are going to send a box of crap to the person. Nobody ever came up for the name of This Week in Tech. That was I deserve the box of crap because I came up with it. The closest
that could be arranged.
No, I don't want it. What's in this box of crap?
Oh, it's selections of some of the finest remnants of my last 10 years in technology.
Oh my God!
There'll be at least one GPS device. There'll be a couple of GPS devices, like GPS devices for notebooks, at least one wireless video camera, a few Pentium chips. Who knows what all else? A little bit of software.
Well, I'm going to go back through the entries because we do have. I believe it was a young girl who came up with This Week in Geek, which was the closest anybody came to Twit. And so that young girl who's now 21, but that she was just 14 at the time, but she did in fact, I believe, come the closest to naming Twit. And in fact, it was when I read her submission this week in Geek that I actually thought of This Week in Tech. So
well, perhaps we can get everybody to sign, you know, something.
We'll put
Maybe something from the great Leo Laporte library, we'll put some autographs.
Yeah, we'll put some more stuff in there. But I am going to send her an email saying congratulations. 1.5 years later, you've actually won the contest, and congratulations to you. And then we still have 2 boxes. How are we going to get rid of the other 2?
Well, we'll think of something.
All right,
I'm sure we'll get some interesting requests for
you. You want to do another contest?
Yeah.
Now that we've completed our first.
Yeah, we'll do one every 2 years, whether we need to or not.
I think that's a
great
idea.
Best sweater sent in for John gets a
there
box.
You go. There you go. John, what address should they mail those sweaters to?
They should send them to
I'll
you.
I'll blog it. Just how people email me. I got to clear them before I start getting bags of dog crap or something.
No way.
Somebody actually sent me a box of crap. I mentioned this. I think probably a kind of muted protest over the contests, you know, dribbling off, and it was just full of power cords.
Hey, you can't have
really?
Enough power
Were there
cords.
Any shaver cords
no,
in the
no,
box?
No,
shaver
no.
cords are hard to come by.
It was the cords that everybody has, the same cord, you know, that standard PC cord that everybody's got a million of, and now I have...
Did any of the mouse-ear cords in there
no,
for the
nothing
old...
good. It was just same, it was 100 PC power cords.
Hey, you know what? You can send them up to my stepson up in Washington. He sells that stuff on eBay. He probably gets to get like $5 a pop for those things.
What do you think I could get? I have my own Mac Cube. What do you think I can get for that on eBay?
I'll give you $20 for it.
Yeah, I'd probably make more
Mac,
on the power cords.
You can get... No, I think it's worth a lot. I think people can mod that thing. They can, like, pull out the guts and put in a good machine.
It's a work of art.
Yeah, it is actually quite attractive.
Hold on. Go into eBay right now. I'd have to know.
Poor Kevin is thinking, why did I ever say I'd appear on this show?
What a bunch of what a bunch of geezers.
Kevin, I do want to thank you.
I'm sorry. Kevin, I dozed off there for a second.
Kevin Treewell is formerly of the Microprocessor Report, formerly AMD. Now he is doing a marketing at NVIDIA. And, you know, you're doing a great job, Kevin, because we all know the name NVIDIA. And I have a jacket. So you're doing a great job.
You and that jacket.
Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for setting us straight on Conroe too. It was good actually to get that information. And you couldn't have picked a better week to come on with the exciting news of the AMD ATI
rumor.
It's only a rumor.
And I think we've torpedoed that deal pretty good. Thank you, Kevin.
Hey, you're welcome.
Take care. All right. And thank you, John C. Dvorak, for joining us. Send your sweaters and whatever else you'd like to dvorak.org/blog.
Or check it out.
Are you going to put a recipe up or anything up?
Yeah, I'm going to put the recipe. I found all the recipes. They were all done on BoardWatch. I'm going to put a little page up with all of them.
That's
and
nice,
then I'll add some new ones. I've been developing some new recipes. So,
so this is a recipe you came up with from scratch?
I design recipes. I've been doing it since I was a kid.
From the Dvorak Test Kitchen.
I learned something new about you.
This particular recipe for flank steak, though, is not something you wouldn't find out there.
You could find it anywhere. The key is to cut the muscle striations in a diagonal so it doesn't, you know, curl up.
Actually, the key is to make sure that you have a very high temperature that you cook with. And
you said 800 degrees. Where do you get 800 degrees?
You can get 800 degrees off of a smoldering fire of mesquite charcoal.
Okay.
Yeah.
A really big pile of...
You're searing the meat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you are.
All right, John, thank you very much.
Adios.
A great afternoon. And, of course, to Patrick Norton, my good friend and owner of 3... count them 3 boxes of crap, but dwindling now. We're going to get rid of 1 anyway, unless she turns it down. Then I don't know what we're going to do.
Which say, well, you know, if she turns it, I'm sure we'll. If she turns it down, we'll give it to the first person who emails you requesting the box of crap.
We could do that. We could do that. We'll put it. Or just put it on the front steps at Twit headquarters, and just maybe some homeless person will want a GPS device. I don't know. Know where he's sleeping. You can. I'll tell you where Patrick Norton's sleeping these days. It's right under the desk at dl.tv with. 2 or 3 shows a week. Is it 2 or 3?
We do 2 episodes of DLTV. We do an episode of John C. Dvorak on Cranky Geeks. And we do a whole bunch of podcasts.
He works hard. Hardest working man in show business. Thank you, Patrick. Have a great afternoon.
You too, Leo.
All right, take care. And that just leaves me to say... Another twit is in the can. My friends, my twits, are you ready? Yeah, the twit army.
I don't know what the answer is. I really don't.
Microsoft poo-pooed it. They denied it, said no problem. The squid on your system. You're dead. It's a fool's paradise.
This is amazing.